This is the uncensored voice. No bullshit, just real shit.
Discussing things that will stir the pot.
Hi guys, this is Ricky Midnight.
And this is your local favorite, Zach Mullins.
What did you want to talk about today, Zach?
So, if you guys don't know, I'm in college, and I'm doing my degree in criminal justice. And so, since you're a police officer, I figured...
Former.
Well, I kind of think of it as like being in the Marines, once the Marine,
once always... Once the Marine, always... Yeah, yeah.
You always, because I mean, Blue Lives Matter.
Blue Lives Matter.
I think being a policeman goes all beyond just a profession, and that kind of ingrains itself into who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of people out there that have a lot of questions, and I figured we could just do a little Q&A, and then we could inform everybody on like hiring process and kind of what to expect.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Shoot away. Shoot away, sir. Well, literally, not literally, but go ahead.
All right. So one of my questions is, and I think it actually deters a lot of people from the police field is the polygraph. And from what I'm aware, you didn't take a polygraph, but maybe you have some insight on kind of like what questions and like what are they going to ask, like what are they going to try to accomplish with this polygraph?
Okay, well, most municipalities or most anything, whether you work for the county or you work community policing or you work for a municipality, they don't polygraph you. Most of them don't. So that's something that is rarely used. Okay, FBI does it, but that's nothing that I mentioned before. What they do is they send you to a psychiatrist or psychologist, one of the two, and they ask you questions. What they're trying to do is they're trying to see how hot-headed you are, see how level you are. Because as a police officer, people will get in your face, they'll cuss at you, they'll call you names. I saw it all the darn time, and I was just a community police officer. I used to see it all the time, and they want to see if you can just ignore your anger that's building up inside of you like the Hulk, right? So when you sit down on that in that couch with the psychologist, they're gonna ask you things such as to remember, they're trying to tick you off. So they're gonna ask you things like, are you homosexual? And of course my answer is no. And they're gonna ask you, well, have you had sex with a man? And I'm like, well, no. And they said, have you had fantasies of having sex with a man? Now, remember, they're just trying to tick me off. I said, no. And they said, have you had sex with your mother? Mm-hmm. No. Did your uncle rape you? No. The answer is no to all of them. Now, what I did in addition to that was like, why are you asking me these questions? These are personal questions. It's really none of your business. Now, I wasn't mad about it. I just said, it's really none of your business. So these are the kind of things that they're going to ask you. They're going to try to see if you're... hot-headed. That's basically what they're looking for when they ask you this stuff.
And is it annotated that this is a part of the hiring process?
I think it's standard questioning. Doesn't matter where you're going, because I've talked to officers who work municipalities, say like Alamo Heights. I've talked to Terrell Hills officers. We all pretty much went to the same psychiatrist. Or psychologists, whatever. We've all went to the same people. They're actually located on Broadway, and then there's another one. I forget what the other one was at. I've gone to both of them.
Because the reason why I asked that is because, like, generally, when you go to get hired at any job, there's certain questions that they're not allowed to ask you. And sexual orientation is one of them.
Well, no, but that does not pertain to police officers. You're not allowed to be upset about things such as that, right? So if you went to go work for McDonald's and they asked you one of those questions, well, now it's an HR problem and you could sue the heck out of them for discrimination, right? Well, as a police officer or a representative of the state, right, which is going to be state's witness, right? State's witness, right? You cannot be offended. And that's actually what it says in the book. You cannot become offended. So they can ask you these things. Basically, what they're trying to do is they're trying to see if you're hothead. So, for example, if I asked you, hey, did your uncle, I'm the psychologist, did your uncle ever molest you when you were a child? Screw you, blah, blah. Okay, well, you know what? We don't want you as a police officer. But thank you for coming in. That's kind of what they're looking for.
Now, if I were to say, that's none of your business.
Mm-hmm. Which is what I did.
This has no precedence of how I'm going to do my job.
Mm-hmm.
Can we continue with the questioning?
That's actually what she was looking for when she was asking me these questions. She was actually looking for me to not get hot-headed. I said, well, really, you know, that's none of your business. There's no reason why you're asking me these other than you're trying to see if I get upset. And you're not going to get me upset. So let's move on.
And
that was all I did.
And then so I have friends of all different walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, say I was homosexual,
mm-hmm.
and I just said yes to all these questions.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you're homosexual or not. What they were trying to do was to see if they can piss me off, right? So let's say, you know, she said, have you ever had sex with a man? Sure, I'm a homosexual. Have you ever thought about being with a man? You betcha. Have you ever been with a man or two or three men? Sure thing. Okay, all right. Well, this has been a good talk, but thank you for coming in. And that was it. And then she would turn me in because I worked with a few homosexual police officers. And then she would say, hey, you know, this person's not hot-headed. Remember, they're just looking to see if you're hot-headed. They can care less whether you're homosexual. She was just trying to see if I was hot-headed. That's what it was all about.
All right.
Or, you know, say I'm gay. I'm like, why are you asking me that? Yes, I'm gay, but that's none of your business. Then she's not going to approve me.
And another thing that I kind of noticed from just looking into the police force, it's kind of quasi-military. Mm-hmm. Like there's a chain of command and it's like a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
What are the general chains of command when you're a police officer?
Well, it depends on the department. Some departments, generally you have your patrolman, and that's the very bottom. That's like, you know, a pickle, right, in the military. Mm-hmm. Okay, you have the patrolman, then you would go to corporals, then you would go to sergeants, and then you would go to the lieutenant, then you go to captain, then you go to deputy chief, then you go to chief. But it depends on the department. Some departments don't have corporals,
mm-hmm.
or some departments don't have sergeants. Like my department that I work for, we had corporals when I started, and then they completely got rid of the position. There's no more corporal. You go from a patrolman straight to sergeant, right? So it just depends on the department, how they want to do it. My department tried to emulate SAPD. That's why we got rid of corporals, because they had heard that SAPD no longer had corporals.
And then if someone's going into, say, the field or the kind of department that you were at, did they mm-hmm. have detectives?
They did, but they weren't called detectives. They were called investigators, okay? Same thing, right? So they were sergeants that did investigation. So let's say, for example, I went to a crime scene, and we had crime scenes, and even though I was just a community officer, I go to crime scene, so the officer who goes to the crime scene would call it in, say, hey, look, there's blood here, there was a stabbing, I need you to wake up the investigators real quick, and have them come out here, or the, you know, we wouldn't call them detectives, and we would usually just call them by name, right, wake up, you know, Sergeant Blank or Sergeant Blank, get them down here right now, we need them to do some investigating. And they would come down, and they would usually be the ones doing the fingerprinting. But every now and then, I would actually have to fingerprint because, you know, they couldn't get a hold of them, what have you. So I'd break out my little fingerprint kit, and I'd do the stuff. And you know, I was actually pretty good at fingerprinting.
And then I have some questions about the day-to-day, but another question that I personally had, I know that police officers generally have to be in court.
Mm-hmm.
When it's a criminal case, as their arresting officer. So generally, what is it like on the stand, and like what's the court kind of process for a policeman?
Okay, so well, what you do is, if you're a righteous officer, kind of like we talked about earlier, if you do the right thing and you speak intelligently, right? For example, real quick, when I say intelligently. If I pulled Zach over for speeding and I had Zach step out of the vehicle, he's only doing 10 miles over the speed limit. So I had him step out of the vehicle because he was a little mouthy to me, right? And I'm just making him step out of the vehicle because I want him to, right? So he step out in the hot sun instead of in the air conditioning. So I need you to step out of the vehicle. He steps out of the vehicle. So when I do my report, I'm just going to give him a ticket, let him on his way. I do my report. I'm going to say, I spoke to Mr. Mullins. I asked Mr. Mullins to step out of the vehicle. Mr. Mullins stepped out of the vehicle. Mr. Mullins then stood by the curb while I wrote the ticket. I handed the ticket book to Mr. Mullins. Mr. Mullins signed the ticket book. I tore off the ticket. I handed it to Mr. Mullins, and I told Mr. Mullins, make sure to wear your seatbelt and be safe. And then Mr. Mullins drove away. You know how to use your name multiple times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I didn't say, which I've seen multiple reports like this. I pulled over the red car that he was driving, and I told him to get off. And when he got off, he went over to the curb. And then after I wrote the ticket, I handed it to him, and I said, "See you later." Now you notice I didn't say Mr. Mullins at all. Okay, and I also said off, but you weren't on the car, mm-hmm. You were in the car, right? So a good lawyer will say, "Hey, my client." So you said my client was driving from on top of his vehicle. Well, no, I didn't say that. Well, it says here in your report, your sworn report, you said he was driving from on top of the vehicle. So he wasn't driving from on top of the vehicle? No. So then you made a mistake about him driving on top of the vehicle. Well, yeah. So if you made a mistake about that, let's see what else you made a mistake upon. And then we'll rip you apart little by little. So when you go to court, you want to make sure that your reports are very, very detailed and very, very accurate. So if I say I pulled over Mr. Mullins and I had him step by the side of the car. When he stepped by the side of the car, I had him sign my ticket book, and then I tore him off the ticket and I told him to go on his way and, you know, be safe. Well, who'd you tell to go on his way? Who did you hand the ticket book to? Who did you have stand by the curb? Who's he? You notice I said the first time I said Mr. Mullins, but I said he. So when you go to court, you have to have all your ducks in a row perfectly. You sit up straight. That way, when the prosecutor reads back your report, he's going to say, well, it says here you told Mr. Mullins to stand by the curb. It says here you told Mr. Mullins to sign it. It says here you did it. And he's like, darn, I don't got anything to rebut what this officer's saying. Okay, guilty or not guilty, whatever it is, right? But you do everything. You sign, you dot your I's, you cross your T's, you use periods, you use commas, you use, you know, everything. And as long as you got good grammar, you're good to go. And that's why most police officers have other officers read it. Two or three officers read their reports before they turn them in.
And because if, say, it was like the one where you were just saying, I told him to get out, and this, like, that you could potentially have that, the person that was guilty of that infraction, because there's differences. Well, this is another question, because I believe there's differences between infractions and actual crimes.
Yeah.
But they could just walk out scot-free on a procedural error.
Yeah. Well, when you go to the police academy, they're going to teach you a whole bunch of things. Like, let's say Zach is driving. He's an over-the-road driver. Over-the-road driver means he drives, you know, the big rigs, right, which everybody calls an 18-wheeler. So if I pulled him over for speeding, say he's only doing 5 over the speed limit, so I'm just going to give him a warning, written warning, right? So I write down here, and if I give him another written warning, he's going to lose his job. So he's going to be pretty ticked off at me. So he's going to want to go to court, and he's going to want to, you know, rebut it, right? So he won't get it on his record. Okay, so I'm going to write down here. I'll say Mr. Mullins was on I-35 heading northbound in a tractor-trailer combination, okay? Not an 18-wheeler, because in the state of Texas, there's no such thing as an 18-wheeler, okay? So he was in a tractor-trailer combination. License plate on the trailer was this. License plate on the truck was this. When I asked Mr. Mullins to step out, blah, blah, blah. Kind of like what I mentioned earlier. But they teach you certain things to say, because there's no such thing as an 18-wheeler in the state of Texas. All of these things, they're just words that people throw out there. So if you just use those words and you have a lawyer who's not a total idiot, that lawyer is going to tear you up on the stand. So you have to know certain words to say, or they will find discrepancies and say, nope, sorry, he's gone. You know, you'll just get to walk out. So if you want it to stick, you got to know, well, your shit.
One of the things I wanted to actually tell you, thank you,
mm-hmm.
Because of the earlier video that we posted, and we talked about entrapment.
Mm-hmm.
You actually helped me be the only one in my entire class
I'm glad.
That got an entrapment case.
Excellent, excellent.
So. Yeah, because our professor likes to make us either be the prosecutor,
yeah,
or the defense attorney and things, mm-hmm. And then there was a case actually in San Antonio,
mm-hmm.
where this police officer, he was trying to orchestrate a sting mm-hmm. right? And he went to a massage parlor, right? And then he was basically trying to proposition her for sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he did is he goes and he's like, I'm going to take a table shower. Don't ask me what a table shower is, because
I have no idea what that is either.
I have no idea, but apparently a table shower is not sex.
Okay.
Right? And then so she goes and proceeds to give him his table shower and gives him his massage, mm-hmm. and everything. And then she was going to service him in other ways.
Okay. Happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
I know what that is.
And then he was... Because she didn't say anything about price or anything like that. She's mm-hmm. like, is this included in the price or is this extra or anything? And she didn't say anything. And then she started to perform fellatio on this
mm-hmm.
man.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, she put the condom on and everything. And she's like, oh, I don't think you like me. So I'm going to stop. Right. And then he was like, no, I like
then
it.
Then that was of her own free will. Yeah.
And he's like, no, I like it. I like it. Keep going. And he's like, mm-hmm. well, because I don't think you like me.
Me. That's the key.
I don't think you like me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to stop. And he's like, no, I like you just fine. Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that being that smelled fishy to me, because mm-hmm. like, because then it moved from him forcing her to do something
mm-hmm.
to being consensual.
Mm-hmm.
So that
like a boyfriend or wife doing it for someone else. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so with what you told me about entrapment is like basically forcing you to do
something. Forcing you to do something. That would be entrapment. Yeah.
That helped me get a very good grade.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I could help.
Back to topic, because I know we ramble.
Yeah, we do.
So what is the ordinary day of a police officer, especially for me, because this question is for me. I'm sorry, people.
Okay,
as
so
a campus police officer.
Okay, well, there's different types of police officers, but a campus police officer is what I was. To tell you what the typical day was as a police officer, what I did, as a campus police officer, you walk around, and it's just for show for the most part. It makes the students feel good because there's cops on campus. Believe it or not, I know they say, oh my gosh, cops are horrible people. You're going to hear students say that all the time. But it makes them feel good knowing that they're safe in general, right? Makes the parents feel good knowing that there's actual cops with guns and who know the law on campus to make their kids safe. So basically, you just walk around. That's mostly what you do. That's pretty much it. Walk around. Act like you're doing something. Occasionally, you have a bum come on campus, and you ID them, you run them, and then you tell them to leave. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. And then another thing that I didn't know if you were aware of, and it's kind of pertinent to generally what we do here, is like we like to keep people informed.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the UT police officers are actually getting assigned to the border right now?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I made a podcast on it the other day that they're actually sending a lot of officers. I didn't know UT was sending officers, but I knew there was a lot of officers being sent there, state troopers, Texas state troopers being sent to Del Rio, which is part of the state. So they're being sent down there to the border. And I know there's a lot of officers going down there from other states, too. They're volunteering going there. And they're having a hard time finding places to stay overnight. And that's what I made my podcast on earlier this morning. But, yeah, I didn't know UT was sending them. That's actually pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if the people I work for are sending people. I don't know. Volunteers, maybe.
I don't know. But, I mean, because UT actually encompasses a lot.
Yeah, UT's pretty big.
Because I know that they have their own police department, UT does.
Mm-hmm.
And their actual academy's in Austin. But, I mean, when we go back to the jurisdiction and things, mm-hmm. UT actually, not only do they own their campuses, they actually own a lot of land,
mm-hmm.
and they own land by the border.
UT's big, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, if correct me if I'm wrong, but that's still in their jurisdiction as well.
Yeah, any place where they own land, not necessarily buildings, but any place where they own land, that entire county is under their jurisdiction. So, if UT owns any kind of land or a building that they own that they're renting out in, say, Del Rio or in that county, then they have jurisdiction in that entire county.
Because I know they owned a lot of land by the border that has oil. Mm-hmm. That has rigs.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's pretty neat.
I mean, that's one of the main reasons why UT is such rich campus.
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
How physical do you think that job is? Like, how physically able do you have to be?
Well, it depends on what kind of officer you're trying to get to become. And then, of course, it depends on what academy you go to. SAPD, which Austin PD does it as well, and so does Houston, you know, the larger municipalities. They actually put you through kind of a type of boot camp, like if you're going into the military, right, which is your basic stuff, you know, climbing little ladders, jumping, you know, pulling on a rope, doing push-ups, doing sit-ups, doing all these things, right? It kind of puts you through a boot camp. You run, you know, you got a rucksack on, you do things like that, right? That's what they do. Places that are independent, like ACOG, Alamo Area Council of Governments, they have, I think, two locations, and there's SAC. Places like that, which are independent, they usually don't put you through very much physical, right? You do push-ups. I know I did push-ups, and we ran, and we did a few sit-ups, things like that. But you usually don't get too physical in those, because most people who join those join smaller municipalities, which they don't require that for the most part, like Cibolo or Leon Valley or, you know, Live Oak, things like that. Generally, if you join a police academy that is the actual police department, like we'll use SAPD, they're going to put you through all that. But the good side is, and of course, you got to be younger usually, but the good side is you're actually getting paid when you're going to the academy. And you don't have to pay for the academy. But I had to pay for the academy, and I wasn't getting paid either. I had to work a side job. So that's kind of the difference. But of course, you know, the pays... It really pays off. I mean, they get paid like $70,000 a year or something like that. So,
when we were talking about it, it was like the starting pay, and I looked it up at the Alamo Colleges. If you're a police officer, just a normal patrol line, it's around $18 an hour, versus like $53,000 starting at being a UT campus police.
Big difference, yeah. The main difference is it being UT, obviously they have more money, but the main difference is something like UT is they want you to run traffic too. Traffic is one of the more dangerous things you could do. Doesn't matter if it's day or night. Night's even more dangerous, but it's one of the more dangerous things you can do. And we're not talking about, you know, going to domestic disturbances at a house, which, you know, you can happen, you know, that happens no matter where you go. But running traffic is one of the more dangerous things you can do. I worked night shift for most of my career as a police officer. And you always get the butt pucker, when you're going up to a car at 3 in the morning, and that's what you see. It's all dark. That's it. You can't even see if it's one occupant. You know there's at least one occupant because there's a driver. But you don't know how many other occupants are in the car. You don't know if they have a shotgun pointed at the window. As you walk up, boom, they're going to shoot. You don't know. So that's one of the more dangerous things you could do is pulling over a car, whether it be day or night.
And I don't know. I would think that if you don't kind of have that butt pucker, you need to really reevaluate yourself.
Exactly.
Because that kind of.
That's what keeps you safe. You know, fear is what keeps you alert, keeps you on your toes.
Because complacency kills.
Complacency kills.
And
that's right.
In almost every profession where your life is on the line.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. So you got. It's always good to have it. You know, I mean, you don't let that fear rule you. You rule that fear. But, yeah, it's always good to have that fear. Always good to have that fear. I know I was given calls, and I just worked for community policing, but I was given calls for domestic disturbances, and nobody really liked to go to them because we're like, oh, geez, you know, we're gonna get into something. And every now and then, you know, the kids would talk back to the officers. And, again, we're going back to what you asked me earlier, the first question about, you know, they're trying to tick you off when you go to the psychologist. And the kids try to tick you off. You're like, okay. But there's a term that I've never said this to you, and you may be going in class right now learning about this. It's called verbal judo. Have you heard that one before?
I've heard that from the military to the prisons.
Oh, have you? Okay, yeah. Well, I was actually really good at verbal judo.
Is there anything you would like to say in closing?
just if you're going to become a police officer, do it for the right reasons. Don't become a police officer because you want to wear a badge and impress your friends and you want to walk around with a gun. Do it with the right mindset, because there's a lot of people out there. This is before the things are they are now. There's a lot of people out there who are going to hate you, and you're going to lose a lot of friends and family members to become a police officer. Make sure this is a calling that you want to do. Make sure.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up for today. We went over our time just a little bit, but I believe it was worth it.
Yep, I think so too. So, hey guys, this is Ricky Midnight.
And this is Zach Mullins.
God bless America and God bless Texas.
All right, y'all have a good one.
Thanks for listening to The Uncensored Voice.
Make sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And remember, on The Uncensored Voice, we tell it like it is.
So be safe, my friends, and may God bless America.